SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. Listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. Well, got a few things to deal with here early before we swing into racing recap mode and the actual pleasure involved in racing. The newest just embarrassments and in the case particularly of Gordon Elliott, just horrific judgment and callousness. And then when it comes to the jockey altercation, it's a topic that gets dealt with usually in the room, usually in the jocks room, and the video of Rad Ortiz and Paco Lopez provoking a lot of interesting reactions. There's a bunch of things about this that need to be addressed. It's not, it's hardly a major story. But the other one that has inflamed conversation is this situation with Gordon Elliott, and it's deservedly going to result in real stern curtailing of his career. Somebody that's a leading chase trainer. And for those that have missed this, it started a bubble over the weekend and came kind of to a head yesterday with authorities. Now the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board dealing with it, and BHA, the British Horse Racing Authority, is going to bar Gordon Elliott from entry. And, of course, Cheltenham ahead, and can only assume that owners will flee, and rightly so. The excuses are just ring hollow. I mean, for those that that haven't heard over the last 48 hours, there's a picture that started to circulate of Elliott sitting astride a horse that had died, and now there's video as well that has surfaced, and it just doesn't matter that it's that it's over there. I mean, it. Here's a leading horseman, and it just gives such fuel to critics of the sport here, there, anywhere of, callousness and, all the things that we hear when, discussion of the sincerity of everybody involved in the game is discussed. So there's not even a hint. And shockingly, actually, there's some people I've seen some forms of defense of some defense of Elliott. I don't really know what. There's no excusing it. There's no defense. There's just dismay and disgust. I don't know what do you. And there's not a lot else to be said. I suppose I could get Nick in it. Nick has been, beginning of the week here, his own, daily show that he offers. He's been, he's obviously dealing directly with it. It's obviously much more top of discussion there, but I also see that it's that it's making its way onto news feeds and so forth. Another example of a self-inflicted black eye wound, embarrassment, etc., and ammunition for anybody who wants to criticize the sport at large. And once again, this all gets back to being a responsible steward of the game. That's supposed to guide your behavior and your approach. And it's it's a 24/7 obligation. I know that Andy and I are going to talk about, Andy's going to be on early this morning. He's going to be on at 10 instead of 11. And I know Andy has got some thoughts about, the Ortiz, Lopez dust up. And, as I said, these are usually, when there are these flare ups you hear from guys like Tony and Rich Migliori, first of all, these guys are in, their lives are in peril every single minute. That's number one when they're out there. So when there's either actual incidents and heel clippings and guys going in, in tight, and the potential is always there for calamity. And so, from our perspective, observing, there's got to be a certain amount of appreciation for how seriously the riders take this. And if you didn't see the actual race from Friday, and I haven't actually had a chance to mention Known Agenda in that allowance race we talked about. And Known Agenda won a short price and ran okay. I think a low 80s, I think an 82 buyer, I think I saw. But Top Gun Tommy, who Lopez was on, IRAD was on Known Agenda. Lopez, sort of ranged and up and then behind and then claimed foul. Which was easily dismissed. And what the maneuver essentially had potential for heel clipping, and that obviously had to be part of the motivation of Arad's ire. And again, you want to have words and come to fisticuffs. You do it in the room. That's not to say that that's what the jocks room is for, but that's where these kinds of circumstances are usually adjudicated. Arad being fined $1,000 for the altercation, and some people are saying, "Oh, he should have days, and he should have that's such a nominal fine." And part of this discussion should go upstairs to the stewards, and the stewards having a more vigilant and more aggressive posture in, you know, not just Paco's behavior, because he's pretty much, you know, his reputation for, you know, aggressive antics out there is well known. And if his are well known, Arad's are very close to, you know, so these are two guys that are aggressive. That part of it, you know, that part of it, I think everybody appreciates. But the stewards, as has been discussed so many different times at different occasions, they are supposed to be policing this and keeping order out there. And so that everybody toes the line in terms of their own riding. So it you know, it really shouldn't come to this, because, you know, guys should be in the habit and practice of being policed along these lines. So I'll see what Andy is. I'm anxious to hear what Andy's got to say too. And I'm sure we'll, I'm sure we didn't get a chance yesterday, because the thing was literally coming to light after Rich was on with us. So we'll see what Rich thinks next week. But Tony Thursday, we'll see what Tony's thoughts are. And regarding the $1,000 fine, there happens to be a story on a parallel, not a parallel track, but there's a story that emerged yesterday out of Maryland, where the Eclipse Award-winning apprentice Alexander Crispin was fined $1,000 and got sat down for 30 days. He apparently was carrying the wrong weight in a race in mid-January, January 16th. And this is a kind of an interesting story, and you know, some of the details are not complete. Matt Hegarty wrote a piece. Both the regulators in terms of the Maryland Racing Commission and also Michael Berry, the lawyer that represented Crispin at the hearing, neither one, and even Kevin Witte, Crispin's agent, nobody's offered, you know, too many specifics about what, you know, what was going on behind, you know, how this happened exactly. But, you know, typically he rides light at 108 and was supposed to be carrying 115. So, you know, there would have to have been some weights in the pad. And, you know, whatever happened with the, you know, with the scales and how this, you know, how this occurred is an interesting discussion. I mean, it really don't seem to get these too often, but it is, I thought the $1,000 fine for this, where, you know, it's hard to even know if Crispin, if it's his, you know, if somehow it was his mistake, or if, you know, it happened, you know, in the preparation of the pad. You know, we'll get that. You know what? I don't know if I could do it today, but maybe tomorrow we'll get the specifics about how that's done. It's an interesting. Haven't had one of these since the one with. It was one of the Charlie Browns, right? Was it Uptown Charlie Brown where the weight pad actually the weight itself slipped out, and you know, over the course of the race, and Kieran was training. Kieran actually would be a good. He could probably really offer the insights about this, because I remember at the time he came on and we explained it. Remember that? And the horse, because the horse lost its weight, you know, part of its weight that it was carrying in the course of the race, ends up, you know, not, you know, being disqualified. And that's the last one like this that I can recall. But anyway, Crispin got fined $1,000, and chances are he had no idea that he was doing anything. And he also has to sit for 30 days. So a couple of jockey stories. Actually, there's quite a few more. I've got a bunch of jock stuff that came out of the weekend as well. Congratulations to Juan Hernandez, 2,000 wins. And it feels like, I guess, because, you know, he was up and winning so often at Golden Gate and, you know, wasn't necessarily in you know, on the A circuit until coming to Southern California. that he was kind of a little out of sight, and I had no idea. I saw 2,000 wins. You know, he's 28. That's a nice number. So, congratulations. It's from Veracruz, and he's good. He's good. Greg O'Brien is booking his mounts. Oh, and actually, Fernandez turns. I'm just reading this piece from. I guess it was, where was this? Was this Blood Horse, maybe? Or a press release? I don't know. He's going to turn 29 on Sunday. Juan Hernandez. Everybody has nice things to say. Doug O'Neill's going to join us this hour, actually. And on the rider front, I want to. I reached out to Doug for a couple of reasons. He's got a handful of important three-year-olds, potentially important three-year-olds. Wipe the Slate's going to run in New York on Saturday in the Gotham. And, of course, he's got Hot Rod Charlie pointing toward Louisiana Derby. I want to find out what's going on with the Great One, if he's running in the San Felipe, et cetera. And there's more. I think I'm sure Doug's got something else, or Wild Man Jack coming up, I think, too, this weekend, the good turf sprinter. So Doug O'Neill, but I reached out to Doug more than that about Felipe Valdez. And last night I saw that Stacy Sanchez has put a fundraiser together for Valdez. And Valdez retired 3-4 years ago after a series of injuries. And he's in bad shape, that they need surgery to alleviate spine issues. And so, you know, I chipped in last night as soon as I saw it and circulated it. In fact, I think Ray Pollock put it up first, and I saw that Doug had donated 1,000. And so I reached out to Doug, and he'll probably have a little bit more to offer. But, you know, Valdez had a nice, you know, had a somewhat brief, I mean, I don't know, 5, 6, 7 years, won 700 races. And seeing if we can't all kind of pull together and help him reach this number. They actually laid out the specifics of the bill. It's a $36,000 surgery, spine decompression surgery, and it explains exactly where the money goes. $12,000 to one doctor, $6,000 to another, $1,000 to the assistant surgeon, and $18,000 and change to the surgical facility. And very quickly raised about $4,000 overnight. So see if we can't pitch in for Felipe Valdez. And Doug will tell you more about it. Shug's going to join us first. We'll find out from Shug. Forget greatest honor. We're not worried about that. We want to know how many fish Shug caught yesterday. He went fishing. That's clearly the big, you know, the big activity. the Monday activity, the early, you know, before racing resumes, you know, whether it's David Fox. Fox is big. Fox had a big priced winner the other day, a maiden. You see that? What, he had like a, it's like an $80 or $90 winner, I think. I saw Fox. Usually it's Fox and Joe Bravo. This is the first time I heard Shug talk about going fishing. So we'll see how he did. He reeled in his third Fountain of Youth on Saturday. 3 in 9 years, if you saw my tweet. So Shug, Doug O'Neill, Andy Serling, then we'll, second half of the show, we'll bring in a few different things. I've got a couple of different pieces that may produce visits. We'll also, with Shug, I reached out to Dr. Alday for a Tuesday visit because I wanted him to talk about Dr. Lavin, and I'm certainly going to, in fact, I'll probably ask Shug about that right even before we talk about Greatest Honor. Because Shug, his quotes about Doc Lavin were very prominent in the trade pieces. So we'll pay tribute to Doc as well. All right. So we'll get Shug here momentarily. Might as well save that the West Coast stuff for when Doug joins us. I've got plenty of other recapping yet to do. We'll save that for Andy, and as well as the two cross countries. Managed to hit both of the you know, they weren't big. They $200 and change both days, but that's okay. I mean, it was better. It's better than not hitting the better than not hitting those cross country pick fives. So Andy will join us in about 40 minutes. Right now, Shug McGahee in on the heels of his third Fountain of Youth win, greatest honor, another successful rally. And Shug, good morning. Congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning.
Well, the first order of business, because I told everybody yesterday, because they were kind of expecting, you know, Shug Monday. You were fishing. Tell us about the fishing expedition.
Well, Finish Line products, it's got supplement, horse supplements, tonic and poultice and all that kind of stuff.
Sure.
They have some of us up at Lake Okeechobee once a year. This is the second year. And for, you know, like fishing for 4 or 5 hours in the morning. And yesterday was the day. So when I got your text, I was sitting out in the middle of Lake Okeechobee.
What? I've got some funny Lake Okeechobee references. What do you pull? What comes out of the lake?
Well, we were fishing for black bass with a live bait, which is a lot of fun. I've done a lot of it up there, and you know, it's you know, it's usually pretty. You know, usually do some catching. You've got a chance to catch, you know, a decent-sized fish. And so that's basically what it is black bass on thing we call shiners. And
sure,
we kind of work around in the weeds and stuff, and hopefully one of them will grab hold of it and you set the hook and something happens. But we had a good day yesterday.
Well, you know, it's lucky that you went on Monday and not over the weekend. Of course, you were busy with runners over the weekend, because last weekend, Saturday and Sunday, was the big Swamp Cabbage Festival, which takes place down in La Belle at the base of the lake. And I was going to Tampa, and Proctor gave me directions about how to get to Tampa from Delray or Boynton. And so we end up, you know, we're the south of the lake, and as we're getting close, there's all this traffic. It couldn't go anywhere, and it turned out it was the Swamp Cabbage Festival in this town, and it took us like an extra half an hour to get around the town, and it just was this past weekend that they had it. They it's the royal palm in the lake, and they chop it up and they cook it and eat it.
Oh, well, I didn't know anything about that, but I'm glad I didn't get hit in traffic. I mean, I go up 27 to Clewiston, and it's right there, you know, time in the morning when I'm going to any traffic. So speak of, but 27 is a long, dark road, I'll tell you that.
Well, I'd assume when you said you were fishing, I figured you were out, you know, out in the ocean like you know, Fox and Joe Bravo, they're out there fishing every minute that they're not at the racetrack.
You know, Fox and his daughter Natalie were there, and Natalie did really well. She caught a nice fish, and I think she caught 8 or 9. So
holy cow,
they had a good day yesterday. Yeah, I know they do a lot of fishing. I don't go out in the ocean anymore. Those days are over. But we do go down to fish around Flamingo. Allison likes to do that. Stay in Almirada, and you know, it's fun. We, you know, catch plenty of fish, snook and redfish, and a variety of stuff. And we kind of like it down there. It's sort of peaceful. And so we were supposed to go a couple weeks ago, and the wind had been blowing so much that it got really muddy and in shallow water, so we didn't go. But yesterday on Okeechobee, everything was good. There wasn't much wind, a little bit of a wind, but nothing to cause any problems. And we had a lot of fun, and appreciate Finish Line sponsoring us, and they do a nice job. They have a breakfast, and then they fish, and then we had lunch, and they had a little trophy ceremony, and back to Miami you go.
Really nice. I love it.
It really is nice.
Yeah, that's cool. I love it, and I'd like to fish. Over here, you know, we got the Bat and Kill, which has got some really good fly fishing.
And, yeah.
Well, you know, if you go back out on the ocean, you know, Siaka will take you out when the blues are running. He'll take you blues fishing.
Yeah, well, I don't care about catching any blues either. I've got plenty of them too.
Well, you caught yourself your third Fountain of Youth. We'll talk about greatest honor, but before we talk the horses, I do want you to pay tribute to Doc Lavin. And I saw your quote in the really extensive obituary, and he was really a legend.
Well, he was. He was a great man. You know, he probably, you know, wherever I have achieved in this game, he's probably been behind a lot of it when I was a kid in the early 80s. You know, he kind of pushed me along a little bit. And, you know, he was working for Rob Lawley, as you read. John Ed Anthony and Mr. Anthony had too many horses just to go to New York, so he split it up and gave me some. And I ended up getting Van Landingham, and which was obviously a big push. He was my first champion. And, was a very, very good horse, and, you know, among others. So, you know, I can't say enough good about him. He was a great man. He loved the game. He put his time into the game, as you read in the obituaries. And, you know, I don't think without Doc Lavin shooting the game, he might not be where he is today.
Well, that's a glowing sentiment. And really from every corner, the appreciations have just come pouring in. And
well, it was pretty impressive. I agree there for a couple of days reading the quotes from different people that he had helped or had run across in his life, and it was pretty impressive. First stakes winner I ever trained was for him, and a partnership he had with a great man that's gone now too, named Henry Meyer, that was his kind of his buddy and neighbor, and out on 42 on this, you know, long field farm. And Henry Meyer had a farm that he lived on right across the street. Didn't really raise thoroughbreds there, he raised cattle. But they had a lot of fun with it. And, you know, like I say, I can't say enough about him and his family and, you know, what great people they were. You know, his wife, for a long time, Betsy was, you know, right behind him at all times and great supporter. And, you know, they had two sons. One went back to the farm, and the other one, Kevin, was in the equine insurance business. So, you know, everything sort of fell into place for him. And I was a little, last time I saw him, I could tell it was a little bit awkward, but I didn't really expect that phone call last Saturday morning. And, you know, it was a tough one. Still is kind of. But, you know, maybe he helped greatest honor a little bit from wherever he was.
Well, there's so many little tidbits. I think Dr. Alde is going to join us as well and talk from a veterinary standpoint as well. Doc Lavin was, this surprised me. He was the first veterinarian made a steward of the Jockey Club.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either until I read it, but it probably wouldn't have been something I would have realized. But, you know, he was a huge instrument in all that stuff. He was, you know, he was really behind, you know, Grace in a big way. And,
right.
You know, Keeneland, as you saw, he was on the yearly inspection committee for years, and I know he really, really enjoyed that, you know, traveling around with the guys. And you know, he was always the guy that always had some little puns here and there that, and, you know, he was good for that, too, because, you know, he knew what a horse could live with. And I remember I had a filly years and years ago by Irish Castle, and she summer racing at Churchill, and she was winning these races, going two turns at on the dirt and stakes races. And the girl that got on her kept coming back and said, "This filly makes a noise." And I said, "I don't care what she makes a noise or not, she wins." And finally, I got tired of hearing it, and I remember Doc Lavin. I said, "Go ahead and scope her." And Doc Lavin scoped her and came back, and he said, "Well, she's got a mess down there, but I wouldn't worry about it." And, you know, so he knew what he was looking at. I remember Van Lanningham got some kind of little problem, and I sent him sent him to Kentucky with my horses going into Keeneland for Doc to look at, and Doc looked at him and called him back and said, where they hold the Clips Award this year? And he won that was the year he was a champion, you know. So he knew what he was looking at. I mean, you know, as I said in a quote, you know, he was a surgeon when right off, had a little surgery unit right off the backside of Churchill, and it's now probably a parking lot. And you know, he operated with a knife and fork. There wasn't any arthroscope, and you know, he and Dr. Copeland kind of went. The arthroscope became popular, they sort of backed off, you know, with the knife and let, you know, Bramwich and some of the younger guys sort of take over and the surgery part of it. But, he did it all. He'd hang around the counter over at Wagner's drugstore with everybody else, too, and eat his eggs or a cheeseburger or whatever, and... He fit in wherever he went, and with whoever he was with, and we had a great time racing together, and we had a great time socializing together, and you know, whenever Majaka Stable won a race, the party was on, and we had a great time.
I appreciate it. Talking about Doc Lavin, Gary Lavin, and Shug mentioned the Grayson Jockey Club Research Foundation, and donations in his honor can go there. And he was a past president of the AEP. There isn't any honor or any area of the game that Doc Lavin didn't touch. And really, from every quarter, there's just been widespread appreciation for all his contributions to people, and you can hear. I mean, if you can appreciate, Shug's perspective that helped launch his career. Well, your career continues to produce big horses, Shug, and Greatest Honor took the next step forward. There was certainly a point on the backstretch Saturday that you had to be a little concerned about where he was and how much work he was going to have to do.
Well, it was, you know. I mean, in the Holy Bull, everything went perfect, and in the Found Youth, it didn't all go perfect, and I was concerned about how far back he was. He seemed to be kind of having a hard time finding himself, and then he got over the turn and kind of got bumped a little bit, and he had to sort of get him going again. But when he got him to the outside there at the end of the stretch, you could tell it was over with. And you know, I think it was the horse that was second, Drained the Clock, is a very good horse, and he got loose on speed favoring racetrack. And you know, when I saw that, I was a little bit worried about it. And, you know, because I think he is a pretty darn good horse. But I'm sure proud of the way that Greatest Honor overcame these obstacles and was still able to win. You know, especially going a mile and 16th, which is a short stretch here over, you know, Gulfstream's always been sort of a speed favorite track. I'm glad I don't have to run him a mile and 16th anymore, because I think the farther he goes, the better he's going to be.
And that you know, that part of it, even in the discussion we had after the Holy Bull, I mean, the way in which he's been able to succeed going shorter. You had confidence that as you know the distances stretch out, it's going to suit him. Even more. Any insights from Ortiz either about the early portion of the race? Had you expected him? I kind of thought that he would have been in a little closer order. By design, especially the fact that you were right on that cusp with the eight hole. That's about as far as anybody wants to be for this trip.
Well, but really about the only thing he said was he thought he was fighting the dirt and the track a little bit. Sort of the first part of it, that's why he got out of position a little bit. And then he was just saying that he said, I just never could get him where I wanted him till late in the race. And, he said then when I did get him kind of clear and where I wanted him, and he kicked in. He said, I could tell we were going to get there. But that basically, was what he thought.
Was certainly a work in progress. Then the Holy Bull win. This is such a deceptive win because the chart margin calls for a length and a half. But in fact, once he reached drain the clock, he could have won by as much as he pleased. Ortiz wrapped up on him essentially and kind of coasted home. What else is there to do with him? In terms of growth and preparedness for a mile and an eighth and then a mile and a quarter?
Well, I think, we're not going to do anything much different. Steve, I might back off of him just a little bit and then start him back up. I mean, he walked tight today, but, he's a tall horse and he's got developing to do body-wise, but I'm hoping that he's going to do that, as we're going along. And I think he has. I think he's had a really good winter, and which his races have sort of proved that. But we've got a really good bottom in him right now, to where we can kind of duck and dive a little bit if we have to, and he'll still be fine. But I think that's one of the kind of things that I'm impressed with him about, is that with his stature, body-wise, and his height, and with his pedigree, that he was able to get to the races as early as he did, like in Saratoga. And in hindsight, I think those 2 7/8-mile race really kind of set him up for what he's doing now, because he learned how to finish, he learned how to eat dirt, and even though he didn't win, but they came back and ran a really good race just to get beat by Unknown Agenda at Aqueduct, and then I think we were set up for bigger and better things. Now, when we got down here this winter, I wasn't preparing myself to run in the Holy Bull and the Fountain of Youth, but obviously I was hoping that we could break our maiden and move forward, and that's what happened.
And you said something about him being kind of tall and leggy, and 3-year-olds develop at different speeds. How problematic potentially, and in your experience of trying to get 3-year-olds to the classics, how often or how much is involved in diet in basically allowing them to get as much as much as they need without putting on weight? I mean, if they're in a growth spurt, they'll lay down and how problematic is that during this this period, winter to spring?
Well, I think it can be when they start growing. They'll sometimes they'll back off their feed a little bit, and they don't show you what you want to see sometimes, but he hasn't been that way, and I've kind of trained him to give him a chance to develop. I mean, as you notice his work line, he's the exercise boy works him. He's not a real good workhorse, but he gets plenty out of what he does galloping. So I've never really kind of worried about that. So just sort of in his everyday training and his work pattern and his races, and I feel like we're giving him a chance to develop, and you know, and that's something that I'm going to watch. Orb was the same way. Two different kind, different horses training wise, but, you know, always sort of kind of watched, was he carrying his weight right? And, you know, that's kind of, how was he eating? And, you know, that's something, that's the way I feed, is I try to feed him as, you know, horses in training, is in racing, as much as they'll eat without them leaving anything. And that's, you know, we feed three times a day, morning, noon, and 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And that's one of the big things that I try to watch is, you know, are they eating as well as they were eating? And, you know, if they're not, maybe I need to back off of them a little bit. You know, they're eating too, you know, too quickly, or then, you know, we'll either raise their feed or we'll be a little harder on them. But, you know, a lot of that stuff, Steve, with all of us, is just a matter of watching and kind of learning from them and letting them tell you what stage they're in.
And it doesn't, it doesn't come up nearly enough, because you know, there's some that are precocious and they do you know, a lot of their early growth before they turn three, and then there's some that just keep growing steadily and steadily and steadily. I mean, certainly you and I have talked about the 4 and 5 year olds, the mature horses that you've had the luxury, you know, to work with, that, you know, data link and point of entry and those types that, you know, got good as mature horses, and you know, that that's one of the, you know, one of the nice things about your client base, that you can, if you've got a horse that you can tell is not going to, you know, be at their best until later, you know, you do what you can as they're developing, but you know, try to make the most when they're at their best.
Well, that's what you got to try to do. You know, I mean, a big horse like Kent, greatest daughter, you don't need to throw the wolves too quick. You know, but I thought when we got down here this winter, he was ready for that. You know, a horse like 10 for 10 that who's turned out now, but he'll be back in the summer, who I'm really high on. You know, he was faster. So, you know, we were able to, he broke his maiden in his second start, and, you know, I felt like that he was up to the Nashua, in which he finished second, and then, you know, I was really looking forward to running him in a Remsen. He was in front the whole way and just got nailed on the wire. So he was, you know, he was faster and more precocious than Greatest Honor. But, you know, both of them made it to the races earlier. It was just sort of a little bit more of a kind of learning experience for Greatest Honor than it was for the other horse. And that was the same thing with Orb. I mean, you know, I think he broke his maiden to start. I remember it was Thanksgiving weekend at Aqueduct, and I was walking back to my car, walking to my, and just sort of thinking about him, and you know, so well, maybe I'll get him to Florida, I can get a couple races into him, but his running style didn't suit this track down here. But, you know, then all of a sudden I got him facing Park, and I worked him after Christmas, and, you know, entirely different horse. And, you know, I ran him in a lounge race here that I was surprised it went, and, you know, he won. And the next logical spot for him was the Fountain of Youth. I would have loved to have had a three-year-old two other than, but that wasn't going to happen. So, you know, it was just, it's just a matter of kind of watching them and seeing what they want to do. And, I mean, I've known all along, his Greatest Honor, you know, whenever we get him stretched out, the thing should even get even better.
Well, certainly in absolute perfect stead. And before I ask you about a couple of other horses and some other things from the weekend and the last few weeks since we spoke last, got to fold in Don and Donna Adam. Talk about how excited they must be.
I talked to Mr. Adam this morning a little bit earlier there. They're excited, and you know, I'm excited for them. They've been awfully nice to work for. They've taken the good with the bad, as you would expect a guy like him to do. That's been in the business for quite a while. He wanted something out of that family, so he bought Tiffany's Honor privately. After, I don't think she sold it face to Tipton, and She had a Tappet colt that died, and then she had a Warfront filly that he sold, and then she had this horse, and he bred her back to something and resold her. And the reason for that is you know, he said, I don't need to be in the breeding business at my age, but, you know, I'd rather buy yearlings and you know, see that they get to the races a little bit quicker than, you know, if you breed a mare, you got 9 months gestation period, or however long, 11. And, you know, then you got another year of their yearling, another year of their two-year-old. So, you know, it takes a while. You buy a yearling, you know, hopefully maybe some of them get to the races in the summertime.
Well,
but I'm pleased for him, and that, you know, they've been here for the last two races. They saw his race at first race at Saratoga, and he's excited. His family's excited. He's had his daughter and some of his grandkids here at the races, and you know, they're all excited. And so hopefully the trip continues.
Well, very much, and we'll look to the end of the month and Florida Derby on the 27th. I do have to say, Shug, that I'm sure everybody around the barn and Allison were quite relieved that the rally came through, because let's be honest, if he hadn't won, it would not have been a very pleasant day.
Well, it would have been a little darker than I would like to have seen, but I've been through those kind of situations before. But like I say, it's you build yourself up, and when it's over with, it's almost sort of like a letdown. Allison's the one that gets all excited and gets to screaming and yelling. But I'm usually I'm just glad it's over with, win or lose.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, you know yourself, Steve, it's in an easy game. And
no.
And Leroy Jolly said it best. He said, you don't play this game in short pants. So, you know, there's good things that happen. I remember when I was working for Mr. Whiteley, or David Whiteley, I was sitting on I was sitting on a foot box in the shed, and Mr. Whiteley sat down in his gruff way. He said, you kind of like this, don't you, boy? And I said, yeah, I do kind of like it. He said, you know, I tried to discourage my son from doing it, because I'm going to tell you something. For every good thing that happens, there's going to be 20 bad things, and he wasn't wrong. And, you know, I've always sort of, you know, you remember those things. When something happens, as long as you can kind of repair it, and there's always down the road, and, you know, that's the way that I've sort of positioned myself to try to train that way, and to be able to take what the game gives you. And, you know, luckily I've had a lot of big days, and, you know, I've had a lot of disappointments too. And, you know, you just hope the trip continues. And, so we're here. I think I got a nice solid bunch of horses right now. And to tell you the truth, I'm kind of getting excited to getting back to New York a little bit. You know, I've been really enjoying this weather down here. But Aqueduct and Belmont, you know, I'd rather train at Belmont than any place. And, you know, I'm looking forward to getting back up there. And, you know, we see what the purse money's going to be. And so, you know, it's a pretty exciting time for us and our stable right now.
Couple of performances from the, you know, from earlier on the card Saturday. What do you do now with Performer?
I don't know, Steve. You know, I mean, Jose felt like that he was fighting the racetrack a little bit. I just got to figure that part of it out. I'm going to go, he's at Payson Park. I'm going back up there on Saturday morning and, just try to kind of see where we stand and go from there. Disappointing performance. You know, we'll just have to see what we do. You know, I mean, as I said earlier, I'd like to get him stretched out. That was one of the reasons I ran him the other day, was trying to get a good solid mile race into him to maybe run him in the Excelsior. And I'll just have to see how all that pans out.
Well, maybe getting back to New York could go, you know, ways to to lift in his head. How about the 3-year-old, the turf colt, Scarlet Sky?
Like him. I thought he ran really good the other day. It was a funny run race that was running off on the front end, but we called a seam there and made a good move. I think that the horse of Bill's is probably really, really a nice horse. Annex, he won the other. I know they really liked him going into the first race, and he ran good. And the other day, he ran good again. Still a little green, so I think he probably still got a lot of developing to do. But I like Scarlet Sky. He did everything the right way the other day. He just didn't win. But I think we'll have a lot of fun with him as we go on, and hopefully that he's the kind of horse that can run in those Belmont Derbies and those things. And there's a race at Keeneland early in the meet, and there's also a race at Aqueduct. The one time I ran him at Aqueduct, he didn't run very good, so I don't know what about that. But hopefully, we'll be able to run him, like I say, in the Belmont Derby and those type of races as we go along. I think he's Sky Mason's by Pulpit. And his mother, Matamua, who we think is going to be a really nice broodmare for Mr. Janney with Bart, so he ought to be able to, stretch himself out. You can do whatever you want to with him. And, we got high hopes for him to have some nice races in the future.
I'm glad you mentioned Matamua, because there's really quite a story. And when you say she's going to be a good broodmare, secure connection she got with Datalink, and I mean, that frankly, she might be as good as any Datalink out there. And here's a Sky Mesa. Sky Mesa just seems to get horses left and right. And there's an Ironicus filly that she dropped that's a short yearling right now. With fairly, fairly austere stallions, she's 2-for-2 already with Secure Connection and Scarlet Sky.
Yeah, and she's going to do better than that as we go along, too, stallion-wise. But, she big, solid kind of arch mare. And, it's funny. I wasn't a real big Sky Mesa fan as a racehorse, just because he's a little bit goofy. But I've had two of them both to run, My Impression and Scarlet Sky. And I think we just had a foal by Sky Mesa out of something not long ago. This winter sometime. And, you can't get me to say anything bad about him now. So, like you say, he's a pretty good stallion. And, he might have got caught up a little bit too, and with these high breeding, breeding stallions to a lot of mares that people may have forgot about him a little bit, to where I don't know what his books are, but just kind of thinking about these things. I like him, and I like My Impression, and obviously Scarlet Sky running right now gives me something to look forward to.
Well, you mentioned My Impression. She's Matamua's sister.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that's why they probably bred her to Sky Mesa.
Exactly. Exactly right. And in fact, are there any progeny yet from My Impression? Are they out there? Do you have one?
I don't have one, but I'm sure she's got a yearling. Steve, I haven't got my book in front of me to be able to look at the pedigrees, but I'm sure she does.
And I'm just checking here. Okay, she's got, here you go, you're right. She's got a Run Happy colt, who's a yearling, and she's already dropped a Twirling Candy filly. Those are her first two babies.
What was the second one, a curling?
A Twirling Candy.
Twirling Candy, yeah, one like him, too. She's just told something good, too, but I can't think what.
Well, that was it. Now they're going to cover that. That was a 20. That's her 21 baby. She already dropped already.
Yeah,
the Twirling Candy. Nice.
Yeah, I just don't know what they're breeding. I can't remember what he's breeding her back to.
Well, this is, you know, this is all you.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of mares, I want to ask you about a filly because I got a request on from a Facebook friend. They were curious about Deepwater K running for a tag Sunday.
Well, I ran her one time, Steve. You know, she ran terrible. We sold her sister for either $40,000 or $60,000 in foal to. In fold in the November sale, and you know, I just told Daisy that I thought, you know, that's probably where it was going to hit her, and if she won and they claimed her, you know, we've got $75,000 for her. That's more than what we got for the filly in fold last year. So I'm not going to run her back for 50, but. I was really pleased with the way she ran the other day. I mean, she did all the work, and but that was the reason. We were just trying to run them where they belong, and see what happens. And you know, I mean, she would be something that somewhere along the line they would probably want to sell. But you know, we want to use her as a racehorse off race like that the other day as we go along.
Well, the dam that Abaco was nice, right? She was a stake horse.
Oh, well, she's really nice. She won the Boston Spa, and she came back. I think she was second in the Flyer Bowl. I remember Johnny Jose was kind of older. He was kind of a younger rider then, and I remember Johnny Velasquez kind of pulled a good race riding move, and he won the race. And I remember I had a horse in the next day. I said, Johnny, would you have done that if it had been the third race on Wednesday? He said, no, I wouldn't have done that. No, she was. Big, good-looking chestnut filly. And she's got that horse Baker's Bay, who's okay. Won his last start at Aqueduct on the grass. Broke his maiden in Kentucky Downs. I just had him down here. I'm going to start him back up when we get to King on the Aqueduct, wants to run a distance of ground on the turf, as she did. And she's got a real nice Uncle Mo 2-year-old that's at Niall Brennan's right now, who they like. So
nice.
Maybe she's going to be more of a colt sire than a filly sire.
And there's also, she also has got the yearling is a Union Rags colt.
Yeah, Union Rags. No, I agree.
Yeah, interesting. And that, of course, this family goes back to Cat K. Also, this is another one of yours she won the TCA. She won the Shirley Jones, which of course now is the Inside Information.
And she was pretty good. Cat K was, you know, she was funny because. You know, with her pedigree, you wouldn't have thought come from behind Sprinter, but that's what you wanted to do.
Shug, I got to tell you, Tony Black is listening, and Tony just sent a text saying that his agent, famous agent, Jersey, Tricky Dick Fisher, he absolutely loved you. Tony said, tell Shug, Tricky Dick loved him.
Let me tell you something about Tricky Dick. There wasn't a bigger character in the United States than Tricky Dick. Every time I talked to him or see him or whatever, we got a big laugh. And, you know, he was around Lexington there for a while, living with a friend of mine. And, you know, so I was around him quite a bit. But Tricky Dick, he was something. And Tony Black wasn't far behind him. He's pretty good himself.
Oh my God, Shug! We could go on because there's always so many fun things to talk about with you. But let me ask you about one starter coming up at Gulfstream this week on Thursday. Hightailing, cool name. Uh oh, did we lose Shug? No, we didn't lose Shug, did we, Case? I think we did. Yeah. Casey, did we lose Shug?
I'm going to try to pick him up, Steve.
All right. Tricky Dick Fisher is one of the great one of the great agents. In fact, John Parada was talking. When did he came up recently with Jersey? Somebody had passed. I'm going to forget who it was. And we had a really fun conversation. That went so long that Shug's phone may have died. That's a possibility. Well, Case, you know what? We should probably call it on account of darkness. Let's see what Casey comes back with. What's so much fun about
it? Try now, Steve.
Oh, okay, there we go. We lost you there for a second.
Yeah, well, what happened, Steve? My phone rang.
It was weird.
But you were gone. It was somebody else ringing in on the thing. I didn't answer it, but I don't know what happened. Nope.
That's funny. All right. Well, I should pull up anyway, but this was just tremendous fun, as always, from Doc Lavin and everything that went on this weekend, Shug, as always. Thanks so much.
Well, thank you, Steve. You know, like I say, it was a bittersweet weekend with losing Doc Lavin, who was a wonderful, wonderful man. But having Greatest Honor win and the performances of our other horses, made it where it wasn't quite as hard as it was. But it was a tough one losing him. But luckily, you saw with all the quotes that he won't be forgotten.
Shug McGahee, everybody, and Greatest Honor hurtling toward the Florida Derby at the end of the month. Shug, thanks so much. Catch up soon.
Thank you, Steve. We'll talk soon, I hope.
You got it. Shug McGahee, everybody. And you can follow Shug on Twitter. He doesn't do a lot of tweeting, but Claude McGahee on your Twitter. Let's take time out here. Come right back. Got a big morning yet ahead. Doug O'Neill is going to shift until next hour, but Andy Serling is next. Gary Falter, we're going to slip in too, just a few minutes, because the owners' conference, a series of the seminars, they're doing it differently, of course, because they can't have an on-site owners' conference this year again. But today at 2:00 is going to start the series of monthly presentations, roundtables, sort of Zoom meetings that you can look in on and observe, and I'm sure questions will be fielded. Caton Bradar is going to host it, but Gary will provide all the details next hour as well. Hour two at the races. Andy Serling next.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
A great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Horsebills.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents